Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Leaders Speak, a conversation on leadership and public service. Government leaders must use the instruments of national power to provide present-day security while setting the conditions for a secure future. Leaders are responsible for envisioning, shaping, and safeguarding the future, creating clarity amidst uncertainty. And this is no small feat. It is made increasingly more difficult in the 21st century, where rapid, unforeseen change seems to be the only constant. How does a leader think about the relationship between power and security? I had the pleasure of exploring this question with two leading thinkers, Professor Joseph Nye and retired General Anthony Zinni. Both bring a rare combination of practical and reflective erudition on the critical importance of leadership today.
Yeah, I think we have a leadership crisis, and it's not just when I did began my last book, I researched to begin with what people feel about leadership. I was shocked to find that somewhere around 75% to 80% of American people think we have a crisis in leadership across the board in every element of our society, and it's not just the United States. Globally, we feel that way. I think that the conditions in the 21st century lead to that. It's a much more complex and complicated world. And so to be competent, you truly have to master not just a narrow field of capabilities, but a very broad field of capabilities. Our leaders are under much greater scrutiny than they ever have ever been before. Their world has been expanded and a spotlight thrown on it. The media, the public, the information, the knowledge is there. So you can't even make a move or a decision that isn't going to be open to criticism or and in many ways, that's good, obviously. In many ways, that really makes it difficult in terms of how leaders have to act. So the stresses, the changes, the degree to which you have to be far more competent in so many different areas, understanding the speed that you have to operate in today and the environment that requires quick decisions, mastering information technology that has overwhelmed us and made the world much smaller and tighter and well-informed, all have impacted on leadership. And so there's a different kind of leader that has to come out now. And I think the old ways of leading won't be effective in this modern world.
General Tony Zinni, author of Leading the Charge, Leadership Lessons from the Battlefield to the Boardroom, sets the stage, diagnosing the apparent global leadership deficit and how the old ways of leading won't be effective in today's world.
Yeah, and again, I kind of looked at leaders that were making it today, especially in fields that maybe most of the field was not successful. And I found that first of all, they understood the people they lead. Even though the diversity has grown, they manage to be able to touch every one of them. They listen well, they're approachable, but they're able to operate with a greater ability to touch all the people they're with. They understand themselves better. They're much more self-aware. They seek improvement. They seek coaching and mentoring. The successful leaders, they don't assume they get it. They're constantly learning. It's a thinking environment they create. They're critical thinkers. They're systems thinkers. They're creative thinkers. They make decisions based on analysis. They recognize patterns. It's recognitional decision makers. They become more instinctive based on their ability to analyze their experiences and educate themselves. They have a tremendous set of values. They understand the importance of ethics and moral behavior. And because of the scrutiny they're under, I think value-based institutions and leadership now are more successful. There's more demand for it now. They're strategic thinkers. They're visionaries. They look out beyond just the immediate future, the next quarter in business or the next year or two.
So what characteristics are essential for today's leaders? General Zinni continues.
They're effective communicators. Both internally and externally, they can represent the organization. They can articulate who they are, what they are, what they want. And they work well in crisis and change. They can lead through crisis and they can lead through change. It's basically the effects are the same. And recognize the fact that in this day, this very difficult, complex set of times, that in this day and age, every organization will go through significant crisis or change.
Leading through a crisis means having contextual intelligence. Professor Joseph Nye emphasizes the role it plays in the success of any leader.
Contextual intelligence is the ability of a leader to understand the context of power, to realize that power is not the same in all contexts. And this is something which is important to foreign policy, but it's actually important to everyday life. Many a business leader who's very successful in the hierarchy of a corporation comes to government and learns that politics in a fishbowl is very different. And similarly, many a government leader who may come to a university to be an administrator and used to be able to give orders in a university, in a government, doesn't realize that the power structure of a university is very, very flat. So understanding different contexts of power is crucial to developing successful strategies. In foreign policy, it means understanding which of the instruments of power you have, hard and soft, will be effective in which situations. And I'll take you back to that example I gave of Obama and Libya. One can agree or disagree about whether you should be involved in a humanitarian intervention in Libya. But if you're going to do it, then the thinking through what is that particular context, why is it important for me to have an Arab League resolution and a UN resolution, and waiting to use your hard power until you had that, and then to using your hard power in judicious proportions, that's an example of contextual intelligence.
Professor Nye, author of Bound to Lead, assesses the state of global leadership.
Well, we always tend to think in our current era that there were giants in the past and that our leaders today are not up to the task. I don't think that that's one could make lots of complaints about the quality of leaders today, but if one takes a longer historical perspective, one can see that there were some pretty poor leaders in the past. So I don't think there's a linear trend upward or downward.
Great leaders see opportunities where others see challenges or problems, explains Dave Winogrand, Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at DOD.
Change happened, get used to it.
Exactly.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You know, it is one of my favorite subjects because it smacks on human nature and psychology and all sorts of interesting disciplines. It really is at the heart of everything that we do. There's lots of great leadership books about this. One of my favorites is Max Dupree's book, Leadership is an Art. And it's just fascinating. He has this great quote about great leaders see opportunities where others see challenges or problems. And that really is the key. Are you going to be a cynical voice for change or a positive voice for change? I think people fail to recognize that if you're an IT professional, whether you're in government or industry, you are viewed by all of your peers as knowing more about this subject. And so your level of cynicism, your level of reticence, your level of reluctance or fear becomes like a magnifier for them. It's a resonator. It's like the ripples in the pond, right? A little bit of perturbation on your part creates great angst in the rest of the workforce. It's not to say that you want to endorse things that are bad ideas, but to the extent that things are a good idea, you have to be an avid vocal storyteller about why they're a good idea. It's no surprise that, if you drew a bell curve of an organization, the majority of people are not like early adopters of change. They're change neutral or change averse. And so if you want to get an organization to move from where it is to where it will be, you have to help the organization have courage and be willing to understand the new idea. We often underestimate the power and importance of storytelling. You can't do it alone, right? Everybody has to be a good storyteller. Everybody has to work together as a team. There's another great book that I love. Forgive me. I have lots of books that I love. But another great one is the book Execution by Larry Bossidy and Ram Charan. And in it, they have a fabulous quote that says, leaders get the behaviors that they exhibit and tolerate. And it is so true. If you're going to be a positive force for change, if you're going to be a leader of teams that are empowered to do great things, wonderful things will happen. If you're not, then you'll fret and fear and things won't get done. Leaders help others find their gifts and find their talents and help create a better future. If you empower smart people to get the job done, amazing things will happen. If you feed their creativity and don't be an impediment in their way, but support them as they go, fabulous results will happen.
Leaders also understand that fabulous results will happen if they take risks. Dr. Bobby Braun, former chief technologist at NASA, recognized this once he took the reins of its science and technology portfolio. For some 18 months, he sought to cultivate a risk-tolerant environment that fosters innovation.
Yeah, well, that is incredibly important to what we're doing. What does acceptable risk mean to a technology development program? And this is part of the cultural challenge that I think that I have and that we're working on. The way I view it is we need to have more of a tiered risk acceptance approach to NASA. If we don't take risk in our technology development program, well, we certainly won't be developing game changers. The only way I know to innovate is to take risk. The only way I know to make progress towards a grand challenge or to develop a disruptive or game-changing technology is to take some risk. And with risk comes a higher probability of failure. What's important is that when we fail forward. We learn from that experience.
Effective leaders must be reflective, learning from experience, but also integrating that knowledge and honing that understanding. Dr. Bobby Braun continues.
So I think to be a good leader today, what it's really all about is integrating. It's about taking knowledge from something you're doing over here on the right and learning something from that and applying it to a new problem, maybe over here on the left. It's about integrating knowledge from disparate fields and bringing that together in innovative ways.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, recognizes that the art of persuasion and being faithful to one's principles are critical to being an effective leader.
Well, I think they're critical, the art of persuasion as well as sticking to your principles. A leader must lead by example. You have to understand the subject and the terrain in which you're trying to lead, and you have to show that you are doing the leading and you're a part of the process as opposed to telling people what to do. You've got to get them to feel that they have an investment in it. You've got to persuade them that this is something that's important, that's exciting, and they're doing it not because you're pushing them to do it, because they really do want to do it. And I think that's the secret of a leader in the arena of persuading somebody to get very, very much involved.
Ambassador Patrick Kennedy, Undersecretary for Management at the U.S. Department of State, explains what his long and varied career has taught him about leadership.
Well, I joined the Foreign Service 35 years ago, shortly after graduating from college. I spent my first two tours in the Foreign Service in the Bureau of African Affairs, came back to Washington after that to become the personnel officer for the Bureau of African Affairs, and went on from there to be a special assistant to the Undersecretary for Management, went to Paris, then as the General Services Officer in that State Department lingo for the Logistics and Maintenance Officer, came back to Washington, spent 5 years as the Executive Director of the Secretariat, went on to Cairo, which was and still is one of the largest U.S. embassies in the world, was Chief of Administration there, came back to Washington, was Assistant Secretary of State for Administration for a number of years, went to New York. I was one of the deputies to John Negroponte when he was the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations. And during my time in New York, I was twice detailed to Iraq, the first in 2003 for about 6.5 months, and I was the Chief of Staff for the Coalition Provisional Authority in Iraq, then went back in 2004 to do the transition from a Department of Defense-run CPA to the new American Embassy. At the end of my four-year tenure in New York, I went to Office of National Intelligence and again worked for John Negroponte and helped him set up the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. And then in 2007, came back to the State Department. That sort of long and varied career, I think, is taught me a couple of things. The first is the importance of people. You get things done if you have a good team. But I think what I've learned is people will respond to a mission. They'll respond to tough and difficult assignments if you sit them down and explain, this is our goal. This is why that goal is so important. This is your individual mission in supporting that goal. This is how you fit into the big picture. Give them that assignment and then let them do their job. Second thing I learned, that operations overseas are different than they are in Washington. It's not that it's better, it's just different. And having served overseas, it gives you the context as you're now trying to manage something in Washington in support of the field. You have to keep always in mind that things are different. The third thing, I guess, is that there are always problems that arise. You have to be creative and flexible. Events happen overseas, some good, some bad, but you have to be always prepared to surge resources, to operate almost instantaneously, to either protect the lives of American citizens to working to protect American embassies when they come under attack.
When we return to Leaders Speak, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, we will focus on public service and offer some compelling insights from some of our most thoughtful guests.